All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Dr. Kirsten Show. Today, I have a guest with me, Brian Dvorkin. I'm going to let him introduce himself, but we're excited to dive into a bunch around exercise science and nutrition and diets and weight loss. We'll see what we all get into, but I'm excited to talk to Brian today. So, Brian, welcome.
It's so good to be here, Kirsten. Thank you so much for having me. Love talking about myself, so let's start with that.
Great.
Just giving a little bit of background about me. So I grew up, we'll start from the very beginning. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Midwest through and through, and then went to the University of Michigan for undergrad. When I was there, I was always kind of on this like, oh, medicine, and that's just what I want to do. I want to go to med school. I want to be a doctor. I wanted to be orthopedic surgery. It just made sense. The people I met, the culture, the accolades, it was just easy. Then COVID hits and learning was different. I didn't love learning the same way I did. It was online. It was just getting used to it. It was stressful. And so then the reason that I bring this up is because I had to ask myself, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? Because I can't just go into medicine without motivation because it's a long journey and I want to be motivated for it. Very long journey. So luckily, the reason I'm still where I am present day in med school is because I found that the pivot from orthopedic sports med to just longevity medicine, this idea of nutrition, holism, exercise, the things I was doing that were making a big difference in my life, I wanted to spread to others. And I also wanted to heal. So that kind of clicked and made sense for me, which led me to, again, just this idea of longevity, aging, health optimization. And so I actually ended up reaching out to a bunch of people, just trying to find mentors, and found David Sinclair. So then in my gap year, I ended up starting a longevity coaching company with him out in Boston. He's a PhD at Harvard Med. For people that don't know him, he's really interesting to listen to. So also there's a free plug for him. And so, yeah, I spent my time learning from him, networking with him. And then that brings me to current day where now I'm currently at Case Western, which is affiliated with the Cleveland Clinic. And I'm at med
So
school here.
good.
I'm a first year student.
That's amazing. How's med school going in your first year?
It's going. It's actually a lot less intimidating than I thought it was going to be. I was pretty nervous to start. You hear a lot of rumors, but I think my undergrad prepared me. I'm just the type of person that likes to keep up with things, and it's
Totally.
really fair. So it's very fair. There's less of like build your resume, do all these things. Instead, I'm just like actually doing what I'm interested in, and you switch from I went to undergrad to get my degree to I'm in med school to work. So I almost feel like I'm in a full-time job and I treat it that way. And then it's fairly manageable. It gets harder and harder, but that's where I'm at now.
I love that. And you're doing a lot of are you still doing a lot of basic sciences in the first year?
Yeah,
All
first 2 years
right.
are going to be all classroom. So like all basic sciences and basic meaning like it is still all applicable to medicine and cases and diseases. But yeah, it's less of
Sorry,
I'm in a
yes.
clinic.
They call it basic sciences. That's like the qualification of it. It's not necessarily basic, though.
For sure. And I only mention that because in undergrad, like basic sciences would be like your biology, your chemistry. So
Yeah,
it's just,
totally.
it's definitely different than that.
Totally. Awesome. Okay, well, let's dive in. Where do we want to start? Let's start with a myth. What would you say is like a common myth associated with maybe training and body recomposition? What's one you see often?
I'm just going to start with the word body recomposition. So
Yeah,
something I
great.
see often is that
Great.
people are like, oh, right now I'm going to the gym. I'm trying to gain muscle, lose fat. Okay,
Yeah.
that doesn't exist. And I'm going to preface this by I don't want to lean too far on one side. There are people it does exist for. So for people that are just starting to get into training, if you're a beginner, if you're someone that let's just say in the last like less than 6 months, or you're really ramping up, like maybe you worked out a couple times a week, now you're doing like every day. These are times where you actually could see body recomposition. And just to define that so that people understand what that means, it's generally just going to mean I'm trying to recomp, and that typically presents as decreasing fat, increasing muscle. And so getting into general principles, and a lot of people explain it, and then it gets diluted in the science, but you can't build and catabolize, you can't break down and build at the same time. So like and again, this is happening over the like long term. So again, even that is a little bit complicated because like yes, overnight you'll probably build, and then in between meals you'll break down. So the process is kind of net neutral unless there's something going on with your energy balance where you're either consuming less or consuming more. And so it all comes down to energy and the stimulus on your body with exercise that's going to manipulate how your weight changes over time. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of sets the preface for just what is body recomp and what do people mean and what they're trying to do. And so again, the reason it doesn't work is because here's generally what happens. So let's just take someone, we're going to do an intermittent, someone who works out, let's say 3-4 times a week, and they say, I'm going to body recomp, because who doesn't want to look better, more muscle, stronger, with less fat?
Sure.
Everyone wants this.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So we take, right? Am I not describing everybody? Yeah. And if not, then like, wow, props to you. I don't know what world they're living in, but so we have someone who's trying to body comp intermediate 3-4 times a week. And so they're going to the gym and they're doing, let's just say they're in a caloric deficit, meaning that they're eating a little bit more than they need below maintenance to maintain their weight. So they're going to be losing a little bit of weight. Again, what's happening is that your going to the gym is going to be helping prevent muscle breakdown while you're in a caloric deficit. So all that to say, you go to the gym, and what the gym is doing is not helping you grow. It's preventing you from losing muscle as you're breaking down tissue in your body. Because when you're at an energy deficit, your body's going to require that energy to come from somewhere. And that's why it's so critical to keep up exercising during this time, is so that it prevents mostly muscle from coming off, and instead will help fat stores decrease. So, well, again, there's no body recap. You can't do both. You can't build muscle, lose fat. In general, that just doesn't exist. You can do one or the other. So you can lose mostly fat. You're probably still going to lose. You will definitely lose still a little bit of muscle, but you want to prevent as much as possible. And on the flip side, if you gain weight, you want to gain mostly muscle. So always definitely continue to work out and make gains and gain as little fat as possible when you're gaining.
Right. So it's kind of like, I get asked this all the time, right? Because like the people want to lose fat, but they also do want to gain muscle. And I think more and more people are starting to realize that, and I'm really glad to see this, but like we, longevity wise, maintaining muscle mass is one of the like very critical factors of living longer, but also staying healthier, in the sense that like you're going to have like less injuries, you're going to have less falls, you're going to have a whole lot of other benefits from maintaining muscle mass that then help you to live longer. They may not directly influence or you know, living longer, but they keep you from falling, which then oftentimes is then what increases the rate of fatalities and deaths and things like that. So just to follow that track of thought there for people. But yes, I get asked this all the time, because people want to lose weight, but they also want to gain muscle, and both can't be true at the same time. So if you want to, and you touched on this a little bit, so if you want to gain muscle, what are some of the things that people need to be doing? You mentioned eating a little bit more. So we need to be in a little bit more of a caloric, not a deficit, but the opposite. You need to be taking in more
surplus.
There you go. So what else do people need to be kind of thinking about as far as hypertrophy training and incorporating that in order to build muscle? And then we can maybe dive a little bit more into the weight loss side.
Yeah, no, this is good to break it up. And one thing I actually want to contradict a little bit that you said before is that muscle actually is going to be directly, not just indirectly with like preventing falls, but directly pro longevity. And so just to give one example of that would be metabolic health. So the more muscle you have, the more glucose control you have, because it's one of the biggest deposits of sugar levels in your body. So that's just one example of so many, the gut brain access. Now there's muscle brain access. Mm-hmm. There's so many things. So it is directly pro longevity. So for people that are like, oh, I don't want to be over muscled. First off, it's really hard to do that. People try and gain muscle all the time and it doesn't work. It's so hard to do. Strength is super important. So I just wanted to start there, and I'll pause just to see if you had any comments.
No. Yeah. You're right. I stand corrected. But it's good though. I mean, I think it's, yes, I think it's good to discuss all the different aspects of that. And we'll talk a little bit too, in a little bit about diets and ways that you can support yourself in building that muscle as far as, you know, eating more protein. And I know that people know here that I talk all the time about eating more protein. It's one of the most beneficial things that we can do for ourselves. But let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about what people can do as far as building more muscle.
Yeah. So someone comes in and says, you know, I want a body recomp. And then we have this conversation and we go, you can't, like, let's be realistic. Unless, again, you've never worked out before, you're very, very overweight. We got to pick one. And so we're going to go with this person that comes in and we're saying, while you may want to lose weight, what actually might be better is what you just asked for is putting on muscle, because I don't want you to lose weight because you have so little muscle right now that I'd rather actually put on a better base before we do that. Mm-hmm. And so now to get into what it takes to actually build muscle is going to be really just, it kind of is simple when you boil it down to what you need is it's going to be a stimulus in training. So you're going to want to go through some sort of weight training regimen. And you're also going to want to have the calories and energy to support the stimulus of training so that you can actually grow muscle over mm-hmm. time. And so what that tends to look like is, again, depending on how much time someone wants to put in. I'm someone that does, I still like cardio. Like, for people that think cardio destroys your gains, it's not a thing. But it can destroy your gains if you're not putting enough time into weight training, because you're not putting enough total time in to actually be able to do both optimally. So it's just, again, it just depends on your goals. Not to say that you should only strength train or you should only do cardio, again, based on goals. But since we're talking about muscle building here, mm-hmm. Ideally you'll probably get in at least 3 times a week. Let's just say someone's able to listen to that. We'll do 3, even ideally 4 or 5 times a week. And you're just going to do heavy loads. So the two types of training are going to be heavy low rep or a little bit lighter high rep. And you're basically going to, there's the two different camps of hypertrophy, which is a little bit more muscle growth, versus strength, which is a little bit less on the muscle growth and size, but actually the ability of your muscles to contract force. So there's two different ways to do that. But if you prefer one or the other, they kind of go hand in hand a little bit. So you can, you know, the strength is going to be 1 to 5 reps. Hypertrophy is going to be 5 to 30 reps. So there's a lot more room for play. So most people are going to do hypertrophy. That's why you kind of gain a little bit more muscle. And then again, you're feeding that with the energy. So in nutrition, we can get into protein if you want. Make sure you're eating enough food. Really, that's kind of what it's going to come down to. And obviously, most people don't have a protein deficiency, but protein optimization is still important. You got to make sure you get enough protein, because those are the building blocks for the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that people sometimes struggle with, like, if their goal is to lose weight and then you tell them that, like, actually right now we want to maybe focus a little bit more on building muscle first before we do that? Do you find people struggle with that?
Huge, big time. And it's massive, and I don't blame people. I struggle with myself. Like, what do I want to do, right? Like, I want to get stronger, but that means I have to put on weight. And it all comes down to positivity and body image, that mm-hmm. image you have of yourself. It can be really hard to see that change. Like, when you put on weight, even if it's mostly muscle, even if you're going really slow and it's, again, almost entirely muscle, you're going to see a little bit of a notice in, like, the way your clothes fit. And mentally, it can be really straining to see that. And especially depending on the individual's backgrounds and if they've, you know, had issues with food or body images before, that can absolutely exacerbate it. And that might change the route you go with this person of, okay, maybe actually gaining weight isn't good for you, but you can still try and improve strength by increasing the way they train. And again, you might not be changing size, but you can still put on a little bit of muscle and you can improve your strength without mm-hmm. gaining weight. So again, mm-hmm. two different things. And for health, you don't necessarily have to put on weight. And so while you might see the scale move a little bit, just because, you know, you've heard so many times that muscle weighs more than fat, in general, you can stay the same, you know, waist circumference, you can stay the same body image look overall, but just get stronger. So for some people, maybe that makes more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to touch on that because that's also something I think I actually see a lot on my side of things, is just when people want to make changes, we end up coming up against all sorts of different things that are going on in our brain, because we get these thoughts and these, we really come to face what we have learned up until now about ourselves and how we think about ourselves. And so it can become kind of a struggle sometimes to hear that like, okay, but I came to you for this and you're telling me the opposite really of what I want to know and what I want to hear. And there's, as you mentioned, there's definitely different ways to work with all of that. How would you then say, as far as, we'll go into diets in a bit, but then so from the weight loss piece of it, go into that now. What are some things you mentioned, caloric deficit? What else are we kind of looking at when it comes to metabolism, controlling our blood sugar, things that all can influence our weight? What are some things that people can be doing as far as from a weight loss perspective?
Yeah. So again, I think it's really simple. Weight loss, as hard as it is, and I'm just going to take this a moment to just help people understand how hard it is. Mm-hmm. It is, I don't want to deter people from doing it, but I just want to prepare them realistically. It's like, seriously, it feels impossible sometimes. And that's because of the consistency, the demand it takes, and the persistence and the delayed gratification that not everyone understands. It is, and gaining weight too. It's really hard. Like, you are literally going against the neural networks in your brain that have been hardwired to keep you stable, to keep you healthy. And you're activating all these different pathways that are triggering stress and telling you this is not what you should be doing. And you have to not just do that once, twice. You're doing that for weeks, months, some people years. And it can take a really long time to get to where you want to be. And so I've, you know, just anecdotally, my own experiences, I've done bulks, I've done cuts. I've done 40 pounds up, 40 pounds down, 20 more so recently is like 20 pound changes, which are a lot more manageable for me. So I get it. I've done it, and it's really hard. And I see so many people struggle with it. So just be prepared. That's all I would say. You can do it, but don't be afraid to ask for help. And also, yes, it's very likely you're going to need help. So I just wanted to preface that, because people need to know that. They need to be prepared for what's coming. And most people, even if they hear this, won't ever be prepared. So know that it's going to be grueling. It's going to be trying, but it's worth it.
Okay, I want to go down this road because this sounds fun. When you know, okay, so something I've thought about as far as like not necessarily being prepared for what the journey looks like, if we really knew what it looked like before we decided that we were going to go down that journey, would we really take it if we knew all it was going to entail? How hard it could be? I don't know. Because sometimes I think that's the saving grace of it all, right? Is like that you don't actually know how hard it could be. It's worth it on the other side, but I don't know. Would we take it if we knew it was going to be as hard as it can be when you're in it?
I think my answer is going to be kind of weird, but it's like, I would relate it to I don't think it would deter the type of people that are going to successfully do it. I think it would just scare away the people that would never have been able to do it in the first place. And the reason I say that is like, not everyone's cut up for med school. I got into it thinking like I had all these ideas of what it's going to be. And even still, like knowing, quote unquote, knowing what it's going to be, I did it and I'm doing it. But there's a lot of people that I don't think would be able to. And I don't think that says anything like, oh, I'm special. I think it just says like, are you motivated? Do you want it enough? It really just comes down to you want it enough. And I think there's a lot of people that sometimes are more motivated to be comfortable than they are to be uncomfortable for the dream of what that weight loss holds. And so had they seen the road, it would probably be the same person that's not going to be able to sustain it or follow through with the whole process that would be deterred from starting it having seen. The process, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm seeing this from so many different perspectives right now, just like starting out in like parenthood and motherhood, and like how hard that journey can be. And you hear it all the time, you know, like, oh, it's a hard journey. But then also being in business for myself, you hear that there too. And, you know, training for Ironmans is a whole other beast of a thing, you know? And I've also been through technically medical school, but it's just different on the alternative care side. You know, and I think about it all the time. Like, yes, I think you're right. It's just you, if you are going to be successful and you know that about yourself, that you are willing to face the hard stuff and stick it out and persevere through it, like you're going to do it. So the reason why I bring this up though, is because if somebody right now listening to this, and because I know this, if you are in the middle of it right now and it's hard, it's really hard, and you're kind of wondering like, man, when am I going to get to the other side? When am I finally going to actually get what I've been working all this time for? As we're talking about now, it's like, just stick it out, keep going, stick with it. For the brain to change, it takes repetition, it takes consistency, and it takes time. And the brain is going to guide the rest of it in many ways. So like you, that, because it's going to be your habits. So you got to take it, you know, it's not just time, but you got to be consistent with it and like keep going. You got to put in the reps, got to put in the time. So if you're in the middle of it right now, just stick with it. Cause I have a, yeah, you know, that's where a lot of people are usually at, you know, is they're kind of at that point where they've been doing a lot of things and they kind of get to a point where they're like, okay, is this even worth it anymore? Which I get.
It's and you know, it's coming from the person who just kind of was a little skeptical there about the people that might not be able to do it. If you're in it, if you're doing it, you're not, again, talking to someone who has also done it and could not be more excited and happy about the choices that I've made that's allowed me to get where I am. And again, that doesn't mean it's easy. And the best advice I would give is that it's never over. Like, even though right now I'm at a weight maintenance and I've never been happier about where I'm at and how long it took me to get here, years and years. It's still like, I had to get through the struggle of, okay, now body image, now I wanted to gain weight, now I wanted to lose weight, and like what that means, and then getting there and then being scared of it going away because it's like new. Like, is this really me?
Is it going to stay? Right. Exactly.
It's real. So just know that the journey is, it's a really long one. So when you think it's done, it's really just starting.
Yeah, which is a great transition into longevity, I would say. So talking about things that we can be doing to improve our health for the long term, lifestyle, longevity, things like that. Let's just start there with some basics of like, what does it mean to kind of start a journey to focus on longevity and health for the long term?
So I view this as a principle of what each individual should stand for. I think longevity should be the ability to show up in health and happiness every day. And so if you view longevity in that sense, it's looking at, what are the things that are going to prevent me from doing it? And how do I prevent those? And so really, I think that I was super interested and passionate in the field of longevity because I was a little bit naive. And people that are naive, you might be even more interested than I am. The reason they say that is because there's a lot of really flashy, really pretty studies done in rodents or animal models. And in that case, you can do a lot of studies to show things that really probably will never pan out to be true in humans. That's why 99% or more of trials done in animals don't pan out in humans. Yep. And so, you know, there are drugs like rapamycin and metformin, things that are still going on that we don't really know, but we've seen like 30% life extension in mice. That would be crazy, right? Like, think about how many decades that would add to a human life, which we just, right, as of right now, we don't really know / aren't seeing. So in longevity, the reason I've become a lot less grounded in like all these crazy flashy drugs and experimental trials is because we actually, it's probably a lot less of a big deal than we think it is. It's the sad truth that like, with what we know right now, what we actually can say, which is now finally the answer to your question, is longevity really just means actually putting in the work. So it's going to be, are you making time for sleep? Are you in healthy relationships? Are you exercising? Yeah. Are you eating an adequate diet? Like, these are actually the places where 95% of the benefits come from. The last 5% is going to be coming from people like working with me or Dr. Kirsten or really any longevity doctor in general that's like, let's put you on supplements and let's do this and that. And not to say that it won't change lives or be super helpful, but again, you can't forget the first 95% of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Gosh, which way do we take that? I think one of the things that I didn't realize when I started out, so I had endometriosis, I had migraines, I had, which I mean, I still sometimes get migraines every once in a while, which really tells me a lot. It's like a kind of a marker for me of like where I'm at. Which I've learned, and this is such a big shift for me because for a long time, and that, for a long time I was like, gosh, all I want to do is get rid of these migraines. I want to heal. I want to heal. I want to heal. And then what I really realized was that like when I get my migraines, it actually is more of like a guiding factor for me as far as like if I've really strayed far off of like my typical habits that are the ones that work really well for me and I know will work really well for me for like the long term. And so anyway, I just want to kind of maybe make a perspective shift as far as like when we talk about longevity and when we talk about like any sort of symptoms that people might be working with or having right now that feel like they need to heal from them and they need to overcome them and all of those things. Sometimes those symptoms can just be really good markers for us as far as like when we've maybe let things slip a little bit, and just knowing that, okay, I need to kind of wrap some things up a little bit and return back to some of these habits. But I agree. I think when you really own that it's about the journey versus the destination, then you start to learn a heck of a lot more about like what sort of things you need in order to do well, like do well in your day-to-day and find those things that work for you. Oh gosh, I mean, I want to ask about sleep. I want to ask about all of those things, but
Do
maybe
it.
okay, let's talk about sleep first.
Anything.
So great, let's talk about sleep first because it's also something that I know that people really struggle with. I don't. So I sleep very,
Lucky.
very well.
Yeah.
In fact, my husband has to usually wake me up when our daughter is needing to like eat or anything like that. Like I'm sort of one of the outliers that is just like I am out for a good solid 8 to 9 hours. So anyway, but when what it what is kind of like the basics as far as like the importance of sleep and what do people really need as far as from like a longevity perspective?
Yeah, so I think the biggest points that should be shared, like what, again, with trying to tackle all these different topics,
Yeah, I
one thing
agree.
I would want to say is shoot for 7 to 9 hours. And I think one, you've got to realize when people talk about this in sleep science, that means asleep. So you're probably, if you're a good sleeper, like Dr. Kirsten here, you're a great sleeper, you're getting like 90% sleep efficiency. So that means that if you sleep, 8 hours in bed, I'm not going to try and do the math, that's not 8 hours. That's less. That's what we'll call it, 7 hours and 20 minutes. So make sure you're in the 7 to 9. That's the best place you can be. More is actually bad. People hear that. It's the science is probably showing that if you get more than that, there's probably some other health or chronic issue going on where your body needs more. And usually it's just really not typically shown to be a good thing in the literature. And less is definitely not good as well for clear reasons of recovery and all the processes and neural feedback that's going on during sleep at night. And so, just first off, starting basic with get 7 hours of uninterrupted sleep, get nightshades or whatever you need to do. The darker the room, the better, the deeper sleep you actually get. Wake up if you can to some natural light in the morning. That helps set your chronotype so that you can actually get to bed at night. Also, getting as much light during the day and then getting the sunset at night. All of these things can help manipulate and actually set your chronotype and your clocks so that you get better sleep. So these are all just like the biggest things right now. And one thing that I want to just say, because it drives me nuts and most people just freak out about like blue light, is it's not blue light, it's light. So instead of like thinking, oh, if I put my blue light glasses on, I'm good. Again, it's that 95 to 5. 95% of it is just light. So reduce your light, not just blue light. Sure, blue light glasses, like maybe that'll help a little bit. It placebo is probably the strongest thing there. So sorry if I just ruined that moment for you. But in general, yes, it's going to be the light. So reduce light at night. Total light, not just blue, and then get 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Try and keep it really dark, really quiet, and temperature controlled. Ideally, you actually sleep a little bit colder, but obviously, if it's really hard for you, if that keeps you up, like it does a lot, it does take a little bit of time to change that. But yes, temperature is key there as well.
Oh, so many good, like easy things that people can start working on and adjusting to help with their sleep. And it seems so simple, but I tell my patients this all the time. Sunrise, sunset, or like as soon as you wake up, getting your eyeballs on the outdoors, like into the light, is like something that is so helpful. And I actually, one of the things I don't like about where I live right now is that we don't have a very good view of the sunset. It's something I miss a lot. But I recognize you can just do what you can as far as like watching the sunset, no matter where you are. But it's something I miss a lot, because it is something that is very, very helpful for your brain and for your rhythms to be able to know that, okay, like it's time to go to sleep here soon. And for that note, I think I have a previous episode on this. I think I do. But for athletes who are traveling a lot and who are, you know, going to different time zones, grounding and then also watching the sun and rise and set can be one of the fastest ways to help reset with the different time zones that you're in. So that's another little fun thing as far as sleep goes.
Totally.
Anything you want to add there before I move on to the next? Because I just want to like touch on a couple of different things.
Yeah. No, the only other thing I was going to add, just because it came up at the end there, is for people that are looking to adjust their sleep. So like, let's say you're going to Europe from America or coming back, or you're doing just time zone adjustments. Yes, light is huge. And also if you really need it, that's the one time I would say melatonin can actually be really useful. Mm-hmm. Make sure you get a really good supplement, because melatonin is definitely not very highly regulated. You're not getting what's actually in the bottle, but it really does help kind of reset the circadian rhythm. Don't rely on it. Definitely, that's a big point when it comes to this. Like, really, you want to find other natural remedies and improve your sleep in other ways, because melatonin is a hormone used in many different parts of the body. And so you're really messing things up, and it stays in your system a very long time at a very high level, not just impacting sleep, but many other things. So really, if you want to use it, that would be the perfect time to use it.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Okay. We've touched on exercise. We've touched on sleep. Let's talk a little bit about nutrition, food. So we could camp on a whole episode just on this, but let's touch on some of the common diets, I would say, that you see right now. There's a huge dialogue, I would say, between carnivore and vegan. Do you have any thoughts on that? As far as from a physiological standpoint, like what goes on in the body?
Yeah, so I was actually vegan for 2 years. And so for people that I was. And so for people that just tuned me out, tuned me back in, because you'll see that the story changes. but when I was first getting into nutrition, health, like nutrition was one of the first things I got into when I was looking at the science. And I was like, just reading reading books, watching movies. And I was, you know, I followed a plant-based individual named Dr. Greger. I'm sure some people have actually heard of him. He's kind of a big name in the vegan community. And I was completely convinced. I was like, based on all this research and based on the data and everything he's spitting at me, vegan's got to be the way to go. And while I can't make an argument against the environmental side, whole different thing. When we're talking about health, because we're focusing on health here, though I do promote like plant-based diets for the environment for sure. It's just a crazy argument. And here's essentially what it boils down to. The reason that people have such high esteem for vegetarian, vegan, plant-based diets is because that's a population that's been around for quite a while. And those are also the type of people that tend to have more money, that exercise, that eat whole foods, that socialize and interact and have good jobs that prevent, you know, brain deterioration over time and work longer. These are all things that confound the data. So you actually look at them compared to a non-vegetarian, non-vegan, and all the studies, they're not randomized controlled trials. They're just people that have been grouped based on their diet. And so you cannot get rid of all these factors. Even if you try and control for them, you can't. So like, sure, is there plenty of evidence to show that you can be absolutely healthy and good shape and have adequate muscle and do everything on a vegan vegetarian diet? Yes. Does that mean it's the optimal for you? No. Does that mean it's sustainable for you? No. And if it's not, then it really should be out of the question. So that to say, people that are praising it, I'm sorry. And I'm sure there's vegans that would want to challenge me on, and I'm glad that you're not one of them that would just want to have a conversation forever and like try and convince me I'm wrong. But again, if you just keep bringing up the evidence, this is what you're going to find. And I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm not saying there aren't great aspects to it. I'm just saying basically a very good aspect of it comes from whole foods and maintaining healthy weight and eating nutrients. And I definitely think plants should be a big part of a diet. And then just looking at carnivore versus veganism. So you have all meat or all plant. I don't think either extreme is great. I would say that we have a lot more data that supports vegan and vegetarian. So I feel a lot safer about it. When it comes to carnivore, I think it's a lot harder to get your nutrients because you are a little bit more limited. I mean, you can eat organ meats and like that. Well, they are, you know, like liver has tons of vitamins and minerals, nutrients. It's just harder to do, harder to sustain, definitely not great for the environment at all. And just in general, it's also, there's a lot of saturated fat, which basically we're finding out more and more about the mechanism, which I always think is super interesting. But the danger there is that there are certain people that respond to saturated fat very poorly. So it raises mm-hmm. their cholesterol levels, which in some people, it's just not ideal. Do we know what that means when you're manipulating through diet cholesterol versus when you're like elevated through like genes, which that we definitely know is bad for heart disease? Technically no, but I'm definitely not comfortable. And almost any cardiologist you talk to would not be comfortable saying if you're someone that eats a carnivore diet, high saturated fat, high cholesterol levels, that you should probably stay away. That for you, limiting saturated fat is probably a very good idea. We definitely would tend to feel safer with the low cholesterol levels. So a lot of concepts that we kind of just discovered there, but feel free to ask or clarify anything.
Yeah, well, and there's definitely, there's a whole, inside of the cholesterol, at least inside of that discussion, there's a whole lot of things there. Just, you know, especially because high cholesterol also can be used as such an anti-inflammatory and powerful antioxidant inside of the body. So there's more to be looked at there if there is high cholesterol, especially to not just from like the saturated fat perspective, but also from sugar and from inflammation as far as what those the impact of those can have on the body too. So I think if someone listening to this is in that boat of like, okay, I need to very much so change my diet because I have a lot of these different health markers that are clearly not great. This is where it starts kind of digging a little bit more into like being very specific as far as how your genetics, what are those playing, you know, what role do those potentially have? And I know that that's not necessarily the most accessible to people. So I think going back to what you said, which is what I tend to find for the majority of people works the best, is finding some sort of middle ground of not just going one way or strictly the other. Is where can you find a middle ground between plants and meat and getting kind of the benefits of both? Is that's at least what I find to work pretty well for people. Is that what you are kind of finding as well?
Yeah. I mean, Michael Pollan said it best, and people quote him all the time, but eat whole foods, mostly plants, minimally processed. And basically what I would agree with is just eat whole foods, get nutrients. I don't really care about the rest because that just needs to be sustainable, or else I don't even know why we're having this discussion. If I put you on a diet that is ideal, that you don't adhere to, then I really, again, I just don't see what the point of this conversation is. So as fun as it is to have the whole diet war conversation, it doesn't really matter when it comes down to it, if the person can't sustain it, and most people can't.
From what perspective do you mean? Like from the carnivore or from the vegan side or just any?
From like these crazy diets, like especially ketogenic, which is, you know, I say crazy, but for some people, yeah, they do actually love it. Mm-hmm. But more just so radical changes in diet versus just sustainable, slow changes that help aid and facilitate someone's current diet to transition to something just healthier. Really, again, just being whole foods. So
yeah,
even like white rice to brown rice, or like, you know, chicken fingers, chicken nuggets to just whole chicken.
Sure.
Even if you need to like rub it in a little bit of like homemade or whatever, like breadcrumbs or something, that's better than, you know, getting the stuff that you're getting in the freezer, a little bit more hyper palatable and harder to control your weight. So again, just really trying to meet people where they're at and helping them understand like what we're talking about. As much as I wish it would apply to everybody, most people are going to have to find what works for them.
Yeah. And sometimes that requires learning how to cook.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. You should probably learn how to cook. for this conversation.
Yes, 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 absolutely. But, you know, I say that, but like, that's actually really the root of where a lot of it comes from, is that we've also a Michael Pollan. I don't know if you've watched this on Netflix, but I actually found it a very great and fascinating sort of like documentary series that he did, but kind of returning back to the lost art and science of cooking. And so many people are not cooking as much anymore. And I find, and I, you know, I just challenge anyone out there that, you know, I find for myself, when I sort of lose the joy of cooking and I kind of get lost in like the ugh of like, I gotta make food again, coming back to like, okay, what can I do to kind of make this a little more fun for me? Like, can I try something new? Can I learn something new? What can, or whatever that is for people. I love being able to cook good food that like tastes really good. That's like a really, I love that. So finding, what is that for you? How can you come back to that place? Because it's, again, as this whole conversation has been, is what is sustainable? What can you do over time for a long time that works for you, that also has these principles of coming back to whole foods? And like, in order to do that, you've got to be able to cook. And I will say this, and I love this perspective too, is that, you know, when it comes to all these really fancy labs that we can do, as when it comes to all these supplements and things, diet and nutrition is going to be one of the like very critical pieces that you get under wraps, because that is what is ultimately going to have the most benefit and effect on those potential labs. Like, that's going to be one of the things that you're going to need to do in order to adjust whatever you find. So I can't stress enough how important this conversation is, because it's, yeah, it's just one of those things that's like a foundational piece of health is what are you eating?
Yeah. No, I'm plugging, shamelessly plugging your, I think it's Level Up program. It really boils down to mindset. Like, for people that are deterred from this conversation of like, oh, I just don't like cooking, switch the mindset. Like, it's really, it gets easier, and it's really just a choice of what you choose to like and dislike. Cooking is one of those things, like, literally ancestrally, like, everyone should, there's no reason that anyone should be like, should avoid cooking. It probably comes down to some experience you had, or just like you choosing to not like it, or thinking of it as work. Think of it as something enriching. And like, again, it gets so, this is one thing of not like weight loss that gets so easy. Like, I'm a minimalist. Like, you find what works, you can stick with it. Like,
yeah,
it's really not that difficult. You can find different, you know, tricks and tools. So yeah, cooking's, again, really important. And I echo everything you said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, love it. And thank you for that, because it's so true. Because when you really look at why people resist change, it's something going on with like the mindset side of it, which I get that like the strategies and the things that you do are really, really important. But like, oftentimes the reason why people don't stick with what they're doing in their habits is because they have something going on with their mindset that's, you know, dictating what they do and what they stick with and what they don't. So anyway, yes, thank you. I just can't stress it enough.
Yeah.
Always bringing it back to the mind.
Always. One thing I do also want to go back to, I said, I forgot to clarify. I do want to clarify. When I say cholesterol, I should have been more, I don't know, the science-based knowledge of your listeners. I do more so mean the low-density lipoprotein, so the particles carrying cholesterol. Yeah. We say cholesterol, that's a little bit more old school, because now we actually know it's the particles containing cholesterol, how much you have of them, more likeliness to leak into the intima of your arteries and lead to ASCVD, just heart disease, everything bad there. So it's more complicated than that. But in general, I just wanted to clarify, like, cholesterol was a very broad term. We could have gotten more scientific.
Yeah, and we could definitely probably do another entire episode on that. So actually, you know what? Here's what we'll do. If we have people listening that are very curious about that, drop us a comment or come find us on social media, because we'll do another one if there's interest in that. Because there's also like, yes, because the LDL cholesterol, whether it's fluffy or BB size, there's a whole conversation to have around that. So, but thank you for clarifying that, because it is really important that people, because also on that note, from like the triglycerides and the HDL, there's a whole lot of things that are important when it comes to all of the above. So, I think we have touched on a lot of really, really great topics. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about before we wrap up?
I think there's a dangerousness in that question, because there's so much I could get into. I know we covered so much. Unless there's anything you wanted
you want to clarify or anything else that you'd like to kind of leave people with.
Okay, I'll leave people with this because we didn't get as much into the diet wars as we maybe planned. I would say carbs are not fattening. Fat is not fattening. So if you hear that, run. That's just not true. Most people, most of the time, if they say carbs, they really mean, and they don't know what they're talking about, they mean probably processed carbs. So even that's technically not fattening. It just is hyperpalatable. So yeah, if you eat cookies and crackers, it's really easy to not fill up on that and then eat more food after that and then gain weight. Sure. But in general, you can be a very healthy weight. And some people just naturally have those genetics that allow them to very much so control their weight better. And so can eat that. And that's where you see people like, how do they eat that crappy food and just never gain weight? That's why. It's literally just the ability to regulate, self-regulate, which I don't have, which is why I eat whole foods and a healthy diet. Mm-hmm. And again, there's difference. I'm not promoting this for those people between health and weight management. So while being a healthy weight gives you most of the benefits, there's definitely plenty of benefits that come from being adequately adequate nutrition. So different things, but I just wanted to clarify that. You can eat fats, you can eat carbs, you can eat protein, all of it's healthy. It's just, again, just whole foods. Like, it's kind of that simple. There's some nuances when it comes to saturated fat, like we talked about, but in general, you probably know as much as you think you do, which is enough to live comfortably and have a very healthy diet.
Love it. We're going to do a part two because I would actually really like to continue that conversation. I think that would be a really, really good one to do. Okay, so people can find you on Instagram at Brian Dvorkin. I will definitely link that here. You also have a podcast, Backed by Science, which is amazing. So I will have all those links in the show notes for anyone who wants to come and find you and chat with you. And then I will also link your website as well. Thank you so much for coming and being on the podcast. This was a great conversation, and I do want to do a part two.
I would love to. I think part two would be even more fun. We have plenty to talk about. Thank you so much for having me on. Hope your listeners get something out of this, and I'm happy to connect if they reach out.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We will see you for the next episode coming out soon. All right. Take care.